Weirdly and Tori here. Just wanted to pop in and tell you guys a little bit about the BarkBox Super Chewer Box. With two Super Chewers in my house, I've spent hundreds of dollars trying out all kinds of, quote, indestructible toys, all of which were destructed in mere minutes of meeting my dogs. Emily had suggested BarkBox to me, but I thought there was no way that these toys were going to hold up to my dogs. But then she told me about the Super Chewer Box, so we decided to try it. Even with the Super Chewer Box, though, my dog Hodor had destroyed one of the toys, though it did take him longer than normal. Emily suggested I reach out to BarkBox, and I'm so glad that I did. Their amazing customer service listened to my concerns and helped me customize the type of toys and treats that I receive, and it's been smooth sailing ever since. But Super Chewer isn't just toys. You get treats and chews in every box, and you can buy extra toys and treats from their website. My dogs are like my kids, and it's Christmas every month when that BarkBox arrives. If you follow the link in our show notes, you'll get double your first box. If you have a Super Chewer, this is the box for you, and your pup will thank you.
Three's a Crime, a crew crime podcast. I'm Tori.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Lindsay.
And that's our intro.
Here we are. We are professionals.
Professional podcast.
Hello and welcome. Thank you. Well, what the fuck? We'll just restart that. Here we go. Hello and welcome to Three's a Crime, a true crime podcast. I'm Tori.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Lindsay.
And that's our intro.
Here we are. We are professional. Professional podcasters.
We're podcasters, bitches. What just happened?
I don't know.
In
my head, I had this whole thing and that didn't come out. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, babies.
Hi, babies. Hi, McKenna.
McKenna!
McKenna, if you want more content, yeah, you know where to go.
Yeah. I realized I needed to take more time because researching really takes a lot of my energy and I only have so much in a day still. So I was like, maybe if I don't do stories, I'll still be on here and react.
Mm-hmm.
But I just won't be doing stories for a while, just so I can also focus on getting money in and doing my art to get money in.
Uh-huh.
To me.
Like, focusing, because this is, like, a hobby, right?
So, yes.
Like, more time spent on, like, what she wants to do.
Yes.
And less time put into the podcast, but she's still going to be here for... She's still going to be in the podcast and part of it, just not the main person telling stories.
I am still like in the middle of the Tammy Faye stuff, so that'll I'll get that done.
That's just a big story. But now you can take your time and you don't have to feel like
you can do stories when you want.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So this is Emily. I'm gonna be the one telling the horrible story today.
Emily.
Love that. I loved everything about that.
That's nice. Your theme song.
That is great.
Emily. Ding.
Love that. Thank you.
Lindsay's going to be like,
Lindsay!
Say
Day! Ding! Ding! Okay, so here, I feel like I gotta preface every story before I start talking.
Oh, Jesus.
One, I was sick, I'm not sick, voice is a little raspy. Two, my teeth hurt real bad because I need my wisdom teeth out. I'm working on it. Nobody yell at me. And three.
She's been working on it for at least 8, 9, 10 months.
I can.
Emily.
I can suction. There's Roberts. A hole in the back of my mouth from my teeth coming in, and I can suction my tongue to it.
It's disgusting, and we don't like it, and it's rude.
You could very easily get an abscess.
Oh, I know.
And then they're going to be taking your whole jaw out, Emily.
Oh, my God.
And you'll just be like this.
Tori has a dog here, little pup.
Yeah, we have a baby here. Tori's fostering a little baby. We posted about it on Instagram.
Yeah, you'll see it on Instagram, but that's what you hear.
Yeah. He's just mad.
He's protesting. He's got a lot of opinions about being put back in his crate when mama should have just left him in there and alone, like Auntie Lindsay suggested.
Also, Auntie Emily suggested it. You had two suggestions.
Whatever.
This bitch
don't it was listen. Worth it for Bren, though. So this time, I decided to do one I hadn't heard before, which is why when I was trying to do Pam Hupp, what is the story I had recently heard, actually. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do one that I've never heard before, just as a personal challenge to myself. And wow, I...
She regretted it like an hour later.
Wow.
Almost immediately.
Wow. We
get a message going, what the fuck did I do?
I usually have to decide, right? There's so many terrible things. You're like, do you just want a straightforward murder? Or a lot of times they involve kids, and sometimes you don't want to talk about that. And sometimes it's torture, and you don't want to talk about that. So you kind of go towards...
Rue's not happy about this.
I hate to say, easier crimes, but, you know, that's kind of... Yeah, there are
sometimes you just don't have the mental bandwidth to deal with.
You just want kind of a pretty straightforward story.
So you're finding your mom's head in the...
Yeah.
Yeah. The stove. It's just too much.
It's just too much. So I'm like, I'm just going to do a really straightforward one.
This never happens, BTW. We all do this, and we all regret it because it becomes one of the worst, shit that somebody has done.
Yeah, the Werewolf of Spokane was that for me.
Ugh, the fact
that it was just going to be an easy one. And
I also looked to see if there were other podcasts about this, and there were only three. And I don't know how other people have not heard this story. It's fucking crazy.
That's interesting.
Yeah, weird, right? Let me introduce you to Junko Furuta. So Junko Furuta was born January 18th, 1971. And just sorry for my pronunciation ahead of time. She was born in Misato, Saitama Prefecture, Japan.
All right.
She was the middle child and had an older and younger brother. She was cheerful, hardworking, all the things that God we talk about all the time.
She lit up a room.
She was really more interested in school than drinking or partying. She was really into...
Of course she was.
Yeah, she was really smart. She really... was considered kind of popular at school, but was really focused on her studies. And she had dreams of becoming an idol singer, which I had to Google.
Like American Idol?
No, it's like a K-pop singer.
Oh.
Like she wanted to be like a...
In one of those. Yeah.
And I was curious of what it was because I was like, she was born in 1971. So like what is it, like the 80s now? And she wants to become an idol singer. I didn't know that was like a thing. After graduating, she planned on attending college and had dreams of becoming an idol singer. She was pretty. She was active. She had good grades. She was well-liked and was never absent in her classes. After school, she worked part-time at a plastic molding factory so she could save money for a graduation trip she was planning.
Oh.
She recently accepted a job at an electronics retailer where she was planning on working after she graduated, and she was scheduled to start April of 1989. One of her classmates, Hiroshi Miyano, had a little crush on Junko, but when he asked her out, she turned him down. He was kind of like the bully in school, and she was like, I'm just not really feeling that. Okay, so we're going to talk about 18-year-old Hiroshi Miyano, 17-year-old Joe Ogura, 16-year-old Shinji Minato, and 17-year-old Yasushi Watanabe, who were respectively referred to as A, B, C, and D in court documents, so that's how I'm going to address them. So teenager A was Hiroshi Miyano. So he was the leader of the four, and he was born in April 1970 and was the first boy that his parents had. With both of his parents working, the family was well off, but dysfunctional because there was some, like, discord between the parents. And he started showing an aggressive nature as young as elementary school by shoplifting and vandalizing.
Oh, boy.
In middle school, he had 3 years without causing much trouble and became completely devoted to judo. But when he moved on to high school, he was bullied by other kids. And so I guess he went to a specific school for judo that everyone was, like, really good at. And then when he went to a school where everyone was good at, I don't think he wasn't as good anymore. So
the big fish in the little pond was now a little fish in a big pond.
Yes. As a result, 6 months later, he left judo. And then another 6 months after that, he left school entirely. He started to work to become a titler.
How old was he? He's leaving school.
I think he was in high school. He started to work to become a titler, but around that time, he joined a motorcycle gang.
What's a titler?
I honestly don't know, and I didn't look it up because I think I assumed it was, like, for houses.
That's the only thing I could think of.
But I don't know, like, what kind of teenager would have that job. What is a titler? Having committed several criminal offenses, such as causing bodily injury, unauthorized entry to buildings, and theft, he was placed under probation. For a year after having left the motorcycle gang, he appeared pretty settled, and he was a tiler, like for flooring, tiles. A tiler. I just can't read, because I wrote Tyler, and I spelled it. Right, okay. Well, that's what he was.
Okay.
So, he worked hard as a tiler, and he was good at his job. He started living with his girlfriend, who was teenage D's elder sister.
D's nuts.
And he actually began saving money to ask this girl to marry him.
Wow.
He was unsatisfied with his job's low pay, and so he became involved with the Yakuza.
Oh, Jesus.
After Christ. He started committing sex crimes. And this made his girlfriend quickly lose interest in him, and their relationship ended.
Wow.
So let me tell you about the Yakuza.
Oh, you talking about the Yakuza reminds me of a very good movie called Ichi the Killer. Ooh. Oh, wild, wild graphic movie.
The Yakuza are members of a transnational organized crime syndicate.
Transnational.
I keep wanting to say transitional when I read the word too. transnational.
I'm sorry.
That's why you were making fun of me, and I didn't even realize.
I let it go the first time. Transnational. Second time.
Sorry. I'm glad. Dude, in the Dalcon Shield episode, I said Defiance, Idaho, and I meant to say Defiance, Iowa. And when I'm recording, I'm like, how did I not fuck? Or when I'm editing, I'm like, how did I not fucking catch that?
There's words all over that you've been looking at for
transnational. Not a word.
I was trying to understand why that was wrong.
Trans,
but I couldn't figure it out because it sounded wrong.
So the English equivalent the English equivalent for the term Yakuza is gangster, meaning an individual involved in a mafia like crime organization. The Yakuza the Yakuza are known for their strict codes of contact.
Like, what the fuck
is happening with my brain? Okay. The Yakuza are known for their strict codes of conduct, their organized fiefdom nature, and several Fuck! So that, I didn't even say it right. Okay. Well, they're also known for several unconventional ritual practices, such as Yubitsumi or amputation of the left little finger.
Oh.
Members are often described as males wearing sharp suits with heavily tattooed bodies and slicked hair. The group is regarded as being among the most sophisticated and wealthiest criminal organizations. Teenager B. He was born in May of 1971. His parents separated when he was young, and he lived with his mother and sister the majority of the time, spending only 2 months with his father when he was 10. He was good at sports and didn't show any signs of being a troublemaker. He suffered a complex fracture in his right foot while skiing in January of 1986, and he was unable to continue with sports, which eventually made him become, like, really lazy with school, and he ended up getting expelled from school in November of 1987. He worked as an electrician's apprentice, and he enrolled in night school, but quickly lost interest and stopped attending classes entirely. And in July of 1988, he was pulled over for riding a motorcycle without a license and placed on probation.
Oof.
Teenager C was born December of 1972, and he had one older brother who was born just 12 months earlier, so, like, mom was busy. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, ooh.
That poor,
like,
woman.
Like, she popped out a baby and immediately got pregnant.
Oh, that poor woman.
His father was a pharmacist, and his mother was a nurse. While at school, he started causing trouble with threatening behavior, and he also was shoplifting a lot. His verbal and physical violence intensified as he got older, and after starting high school in April of 88, his behavior just got worse and worse. He stopped attending school. He wouldn't come home at night. He was constantly hanging out with hooligans and was violent at home.
Hooligans.
Hooligans. And he ended up leaving school 5 months later. They were at a total loss for how to help him and were, like, at the end of their rope. And since summer that year of 1988, C and his elder brother his elder brother's rooms became a hangout for the neighborhood hoodlums because his parents were often busy and not at home. And C was also placed under probation after driving a motorcycle without a license.
Not a great thing that they all found each other.
No.
To
exactly.
Hooligan around together.
Yeah.
Shenanigans.
Teenager D was born in December of 1971. His parents separated when he was 4 and divorced 2 years after that. And then his father was killed in a traffic accident soon after. D was raised by his mother and his older sister. And although he enrolled in night school in April of 86, he stopped attending classes only a week later and dropped out. In October of 86, he was placed under probation for domestic violence, and he had some hits on his record for some minor criminal offenses. And he had a few different jobs, but didn't last very long with any of them. So teenager A is 18, teenager okay. B is 17, teenager C is 16, and then teenager D is also 17. All four boys attended the same middle school, with A as the oldest, followed by B and D in the grade below, and C another grade down. C's house had two rooms upstairs, which were occupied, like I said, by him and his brother. And I call him Brother E. Okay. C had the brother. Hooligans hung out in the room. B was in the same grade as Brother E and started hanging out at C and E's hooligan okay. house. Okay. This is the hooligan house.
Okay.
Okay. And in October of 88, Brother E's motorcycle was stolen, and A, who was the leader of these four boys, started to come over to C's while helping Brother E search for his motorcycle. A small gang of violent teenagers quickly formed.
I was going to say, just
like picturing like Clockwork Orange.
Yeah,
like,
it's straight
just, like,
up.
Going around town just beating people up.
Yeah.
Teenager A was feared by the others, and under his leadership, the gang behaved like the Yakuza. B was second in command, and he dominated the others when A was absent. So, in the evening of the 25th of November, 1988, A and C were wandering around on separate mopeds in Misato, I hope I'm saying that right, with the purpose of robbing and raping women.
All right.
Just a fun evening.
Yeah.
You know.
What do you think we should do tonight?
I don't know. Let's take the mopeds out and just murder. A little rape.
We'll do some rape.
Not murder. Pillaging. Just robbing and raping.
Oh, robbing.
No one had murdered anyone.
Yet.
At around 8:30 p.m., Junko Furuta was cycling home after work, looking forward to catching the last episode of her favorite TV drama.
Oh, did we know what it was?
I will tell you at the end.
Oh, God. Is it a show that she ends up on?
No.
Because, you know, like, I'm just saying, like, we all joke sometimes, like, oh,
no,
I'm
going to
be on a 48 hours,
I know.
And it, you know.
It is not, no. A told C to kick her, and C did so, and then fled the scene immediately.
Oh,
so I picture him just running up, kicking her off her bike, and being like, boop, 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 like, back into the forest. Junko obviously fell off of her bike, and A approached her acting like a witness. And he's like, oh my God, like, are you okay?
Oh.
I just saw what happened. And he goes, that one over there is crazy. I've been threatened by him with a knife. You might still be in danger. Let me walk you home.
No.
Gaining Junko's trust, A lured her to a nearby warehouse. I should say, trigger all, no animals, but every other trigger warning. This is your chance.
Oh, God.
A lured her to a nearby warehouse where he dropped his pretense entirely and just started raping her. Literally was just like,
I'm done now.
I was with that dude, actually. So, like, take off your clothes. As he was raping her, he said, I'm his mate and we're both Yakuza. If you obey me, I will spare your life. Let me have sex with you. If you scream, you're dead. So then he took her to a hotel by taxi where he raped her again. And from the hotel, A called C's house. Now, remember, C is the one who kicked her off the bike.
Ran away.
And ran away.
Like a little bitch.
Yeah. So from the hotel, you want to try that again into your microphone?
Like a little bitch.
Tori's holding a puppy. Okay. So from the hotel, A called C's house, the spot for all the neighborhood hooligans. And bragging about raping this girl. And so B, who is at C's house, has this idea that they should abduct and imprison her and just allow numerous Yakuza members to do whatever they would like. And the group had a history of gang rape and had actually recently kidnapped and raped another girl who they released afterwards. At 3 o'clock a.m., A took Junko to a nearby park where B, C, and D were waiting. They found her address in a notebook that she had in her backpack, and they told her, we know where you live. You know, if you try and get away, the Yakuza will come, kill your whole family. And the four boys overpowered her, and she was taken to Hooligan C's house in the Ayase district of Adichie, Tokyo, where she was repeatedly gang raped. On the 27th of November, Junko's parents contacted the police to report her missing. And to discourage further investigation, the four boys forced her to call her mother three separate times to convince her that she had run away but was safe and staying with friends and wanted the police search to be stopped.
Oh, my God.
On the night of November 28th, A invited two other boys over to the hooligan house where they had Junko. And Junko tried to run away and was screaming, and A pulled her legs out from under her and put a pillow over her face.
Mm.
Now, here's the thing. Hooligan C's house has parents.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Parents are never home, though, which is why it has become a hooligan house. But when Junko tried to run away and was screaming, woke the parents up. And they went to go check on the scream, to which their son C was like, it was nothing. And the parents just accepted that answer.
Ugh.
For 44 days.
Ooh, what? Well, I mean, their kid is a out and psycho. About loud ass, so they probably don't want to.
So
he probably bullies them.
If he were my, like, if any of these children were my children, I would probably be terrified of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
These are kids that'll murder you in your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So when A had grabbed her legs and put a pillow over her face, which woke up the parents, she was unconscious. So I think the parents were literally like, what happened? He's like, oh, nothing. And she's like unconscious on the bed or whatever. They again gang raped her. And she was completely unconscious and staring at the ceiling without blinking.
Oh, God.
When C's parents were present, Junko was forced to act as his girlfriend. And they basically had to stop pretending. They just decided to stop pretending because it became very clear that C's parents were not going to
do anything.
They did state that they didn't intervene because they were afraid of C because their own son was growing increasingly violent towards them.
Yeah.
The boys said that possibly 100 different people knew that Junko had been imprisoned there, but it's not clear if this means that's how many people visited the house at different times while she was there, or if that's how many people were there to rape and abuse her.
Oh, fuck.
Trigger, 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 trigger. I'm going to go over the bullet points of what her 44 days were like.
Oh, God.
So when they brought her into the house, the four of them shaved her pubic hair and forced her to dance naked and masturbate in front of them. They force-fed her large amounts of alcohol, milk, and water. She was forced to smoke multiple cigarettes at once and inhale paint thinner. She was starved. She was raped over 500 times. And more than 100 men are believed to have raped her. At one point, she was raped by 12 different men in one day. Jesus. The men would urinate on her. She was fed cockroaches. She was forced to strip and dance, masturbate in front of others. Burned with lighters, burned with cigarettes. Fireworks were set off in her ears, mouth, vagina, and anus. Foreign objects were inserted into her vagina and anus, including a still-lit hot light bulb that they twisted until it broke inside of her.
Yes, oh, I have heard this story.
A lit cigarette, a bottle, scissors, and skewers of grilled chicken.
Oh my God.
Face was held against the concrete and jumped on. Hands were tied to the ceiling, and her body was used as a punching bag until her damaged organs made blood run from her mouth. Dumbbells were dropped onto her stomach. She was stabbed with sewing needles in her chest. Her left nipple was cut off and destroyed with pliers. She was beat with bamboo sticks, golf clubs, and iron rods. Her hands were smashed by weights, and her fingernails were cracked. Forced to sleep on the balcony outside in the wintertime. And at one point at the beginning of December, when the boys were asleep, Junko was actually able to call the police, but was stopped by A before she could say anything.
Fuck.
And the police immediately called back, but A told them it was a mistake and they just did nothing. They punished her by dripping hot wax onto her face, burning her eyelids with a lighter, and dousing her legs in lighter fluid and setting her on fire. Jesus
Christ.
She went into convulsions, and the boys would later say that they thought she was faking a seizure, and they set her on fire again and put it out. After 20 days, she was unable to walk or really perform any bodily function of any kind. I read she couldn't eat anymore, and so, like, even if she drank water, she would just throw it up. Her face was also, like, her whole body was drastically altered from the brutality of all these attacks. Her face was so swollen that it was difficult to make out any of her features. Her body was also severely crippled, giving off a rotting smell that caused the four boys to lose sexual interest in her. Yeah. As a result, the boys kidnapped and gang-raped 19-year-old woman who, like Junko, was on her way home from work. Her injuries had become so severe that it took her over an hour to crawl downstairs and use the bathroom, so they gave her a bucket, and then they would make her drink her own urine. On the 4th of January, 1989, after losing a game of Mahjong against another person the night before, A decided to vent his anger towards Junko. Again, lighter fluid was poured onto her legs, arms, face, and stomach, and then she was lit on fire. She made attempts to put out the fire, but gradually became unresponsive, and they continued to punch her, ignited a candle, dripped hot wax on her face, placed two short candles on her eyelids, and forced her to drink her own urine again. After she was kicked, she fell onto a stereo unit and collapsed into a fit of convulsions. Since she was bleeding profusely and pus was oozing from her burns, the four boys covered their hands in plastic bags, and they continued to beat her. Drop an iron exercise ball. That's not a thing.
Yeah, like a kettlebell.
Oh. Okay. Onto her stomach several times. The attack reportedly lasted 2 hours. And she eventually succumbed to her wounds and died.
I was going to say, how did she make it this long?
I have absolutely no idea. Afraid of being penalized or penalized?
Penalized.
Okay. After being...
Penalized.
Afraid of being...
Depends on what you're talking... Sports is penalized.
Oh, all right. Well, afraid of being in trouble for murder, the group wrapped her body in blankets and shoved her into a travel bag. The boys talked about what to do with her. Some of the ideas were bury her, mincing her body up, and someone said we can put her into an oil drum and fill it with concrete and throw her into the ocean. And the police would never find her. So they then put her body into a 55-gallon drum and filled it with wet concrete. And around 8 o'clock p.m., they loaded it and eventually disposed the drum into a cement truck in Kodo, Tokyo. They planned to drop it into the sea, but on the way, they passed an empty space near a development site and just apparently decided to just leave it there. Jesus Christ. During her captivity, Junko had mentioned several times that she regretted not being able to watch the final episode of the show was called Tonbo. Tonbo. A found the videotape of the episode and placed it in the travel bag with her. And as he later explained it, he said it was not because he pitied her, but because he did not want her to return as a ghost and haunt him. On January 23rd, 1989, A and B were arrested for the gang rape of a 19-year-old girl who they kidnapped in December. And on March 29th, two police officers came to interrogate them because they had women's underwear that had been found at their homes, and they believed it might have a connection to a different crime. During the interrogation, A believed that one of the officers was aware of his culpability in the murder, thinking that B had already confessed everything, and so he just immediately gave all of it up. And
they think they're so smart, but they're so fucking smart.
Oh my God. He immediately gave it all up and told the police where to find her body. Jesus. And the police were initially confused by the confession because they were referring to a different murder of a different woman and her 7-year-old son that had occurred 9 days before Junko's abduction, which is a case that is still unsolved, by the way.
Oh, shit.
So they're like, we think you did this. And he doesn't even know that that's what he's in for. And he's like, oh my God, I totally killed that girl. And they're like, what girl? And he's like, the girl in the oil drum. And they're like, what?
What?
Girl what are you talking about? Yeah. The police found the drum containing Junko's body the following day, and she was identified by her fingerprints. On April 1st of 1989, B was arrested for a separate sexual assault and subsequently rearrested for Junko's murder. The arrest of D, C, and brother E followed, and several other accomplices who participated in Junko's abuse were officially identified and charged with rape after their DNA was found on and inside her body. The identities of the boys were sealed by the court as they were all juveniles at the time of the crime, but journalists from the Shukan Bunshin magazine discovered their identities and published them, stating that given the severity of the crime, the accused did not deserve to have their right to anonymity upheld.
I support
that. Yeah. In court, extremely stern words were heard during the sentencing, like, exceptionally grave and atrocious violence inflicted upon a blameless victim. Inhuman brutality that can be hardly found an example in the history of crime. Erratic and relentless violence, rape, and torture. No respect for fellow human beings whatsoever. And murdered so brutally at the young age of 17, the victim's soul must be wandering in torment. Oof. The judge asserted that there were no words that could fully describe Junko's pain and suffering, and hearing the details of the violence and torture put upon her, a spectator in the gallery actually fainted. In the court documents, it stated that all four of the gang, quote, showed deep remorse and pledged to become better members of society in the future. Mm-mm. In July of 1990, a court sentenced A to 17 years in prison. He appealed the sentence, but he was sentenced to an additional 3 years in prison, so he had a 20-year sentence. Still not long enough. But it's the second longest sentence given in Japan before life imprisonment. A's mother reportedly paid 50 million yen, which is 425,000 U.S. in compensation, ordered by the civil court after selling their family home. A was released in summer of 2009, and in January of 2013, he was arrested for fraud, but remained silent during the interrogation. And due to insufficient evidence, he was released without charge. B was sentenced to a 5 to 10 year term. He served 8 years in a juvenile prison before being released in 2004. And after his release, he took the family name Kamisaku when he was adopted by a supporter of his. He's said to have boasted about his role in the kidnapping, rape, and torture of Junko. In July of 2004, he was arrested for assaulting an acquaintance he thought his girlfriend may have been involved with, so he tracked him down, beat him, and shoved him into his truck, and then allegedly beat the man for 4 hours while repeatedly threatening to kill him, Jesus. Boasting that he had, quote, already committed murder, and that he, quote, knew how to coax the police and the prosecutor. He was sentenced to 7 years in prison and has since been released. In court, it was revealed that B's father started saving money for compensation to Junko's parents, despite Junko's parents' refusal to accept it. A few sources report that B's mother vandalized Junko's grave, quote, because she ruined her son's life.
Oh my God, fuck you. No wonder you have a fucking asshole.
Yeah. A source in more recent years states that B's father's savings, originally meant for Junko's parents, had been consumed by B for, quote, luxuries. C, who originally received a 4 to 6 year sentence, was resentenced to 5 to 9 years upon appeal. C's parents, and so C was the owner, or the one who had the hooligan house. Mm-hmm. His parents and brother were not charged. And he actually got married in 2006. Junko's parents were pissed about the sentences that their daughter's killers had. And they did win a civil suit against the parents of C, in whose home the crimes were committed. After his release, C moved in with his mother. However, in 2018, he was arrested again for attempted murder after beating a 32-year-old man with a metal rod and slashing his throat with a knife. D was originally sentenced to 3 to 4 years in prison, but he received an upgraded sentence of 5 to 7 years, and upon his release, he moved in with his mother and has not worked since. Many believe that the sentences were too light for the severity of the crimes committed, and all four boys pled guilty to, quote, committing bodily injury that resulted in death rather than murder. Junko Furuta's funeral was held on the 2nd of April, 1989, and the following day would have been her first day at her new job. Junko's would-be employer presented her parents with the uniform she was going to wear at work, and it was placed inside of her coffin.
Jesus.
And at her graduation, Furuta's school principal presented her a high school diploma, which was given to her parents. The location where Junko's body was abandoned has been developed since and is now a park. C's parents and brother were not charged, like I said. Their house in which Junko was forced to spend the last 44 days of her life was demolished after the murder and replaced with a new house that has since been owned by a different family. You can visit a memorial site dedicated to Junko Furuta, and I will put it in the link below, but it is junkofuruta.gonetoosoon.org. And you can also go to findagrave.com and enter her name. And there's also a Facebook page in honor of her that I will also post in the show notes. And that was just it was a little shorty story, but it was horrible.
I'm glad it's not longer.
Yeah.
What it was.
It's called Concrete in English. That's the name of the movie that they made about it. 4.6 out of 10 on IMDb.
It's funny because the reason I picked this one is because the title I saw was like high school girl encased in concrete. And at first I was like, ooh, maybe this will be like a Elisa Lam. Like, did someone do it to her? Or did she fall in by herself? And that's what I'm thinking. And I'm like, okay, that's like the one I'm going to do. And then I start writing and I'm like, 44 days in hell. I'm like, what? That's not the same thing. And I'm like, oh my God, none of this has anything to do with concrete. Concrete is one little bullet point in the story. The rest is just torture.
Yeah.
But I was already balls deep and I just really had to.
That's what happens.
Come in there and finish.
This is what we get for trying to do an easy one so we don't cry for the day.
So that was terrible. I really tried to make it an easy one because the last couple have been so terrible, but it's just bad. So,
I mean,
I'll try better next time.
We cover true crime.
I'm getting off now.
Oh my God. Nobody was like, go watch it. I'm getting off now.
Okay.
I love you.
See you next time. Go to our linktree.com/threescrime to find where to listen and all of our socials and our Patreon and buy us a coffee on there and follow us on our personal Instagrams that are on there and also go to the BarkBox affiliate code and the Buzzsprout affiliate code and Podmatch affiliate code and all the affiliate codes we have.
Oh my God. Yeah, three is a crime in Instagram.
In Linktree /threescrime. Patreon.com/threescrime podcast.
Become a Patreon.
Please. Yeah. Okay, love you. Bye.
Wait, you have to say your thing.
Oh my God.
McKenna. Remember who the fuck you are and what you fucking represent, you bitch. Okay. McKenna, if you do not represent the $5 Patreon tier, I will literally come at you. I'm kidding. I love you. I don't we want you for your money, but I know you want some extra of us, and extra of
you'll
us
get
is
it.
What you're going to get.
She does.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
We love you. Goodbye.
Bye. Okay, love you. Bye.
We were going to talk about some true crime stuff that we watched this week.
Do you want to talk about Bad Vegan since you were...
So the only thing, because since you guys... So they haven't watched it. Bad Vegan is a new true crime documentary out on Netflix, and again, it is the year of swindlers. Yeah. Like, that's what this year seems to be.
Anna Delvey.
I'm Anna.
I sent you the money. There's something wrong with my bank.
So.
Overseas bank.
Accurate.
Anna Delvey.
Actually frightening how well you do that. Like, I think you do it better than What's Her Face in the show.
I was going to say you sound
like more like the real Anna Delvey.
Thank you.
If there, well, there isn't really a real
that is true. Anna, I'm a Delphi.
This bad vegan makes
the Tinder Swindler look like a little bitch.
So the first episode, I was like, because I know you said, oh, I watched it and I'm hooked. And I started it and I almost felt like it was kind of a little slow at the beginning.
It was.
And I'm just like, I don't know if I really care, you know. So she created this raw vegan restaurant before,
before
it was trendy. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge hit and she had done cookbooks.
Is it a restaurant if everything was raw?
Yep. Vegan and raw.
Yeah, but is it a restaurant? Like, you're not cooking anything. What are you doing? Just cutting stuff? There's just cutting boards and knives everywhere, but there's no heat. Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, the food looked beautiful.
It did look great. I mean, I saw the first episode.
It looks beautiful. And so I saw the first episode, and it kind of picked up at the end. And just so everybody knows, the dog lives.
Yeah,
they sure worried. Because like when they first presented, it was sort of like...
They really made it seem like...
Something bad was going to happen to the dog. Nothing bad happens to the dog.
And the lady was like, well, Leon was like... 9 then. And I was like, oh, okay, the dog is still alive.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's when I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yes. And I believe the dog actually is still alive.
Yeah.
And so everybody loved the dog. The dog is well taken care of.
Oh, my God.
It's the smallest part in the whole story. And everyone's like, where is he?
Where's the dog? We're all, well, because Leon was like, I mean, that dog is literally the love of her life.
Yeah, it's her and soulmate
and so everybody that was in her life, I feel like, had that recognition of how important Leon the dog is. But it is fucking insanity.
Yeah.
And she definitely got a bad rap. I think she made choices and they were not good ones, but like I think it was like Stockholm syndrome.
When you're in that, you're in a completely different world and mindset. And the fact that if this happened to a dude, nobody would say, why did you stay?
Right, right.
It's only women like, why didn't you just fucking leave?
Well, and it's so funny because, you know, Lindsay and I are both into the woo-woo and the show has elements of the woo. And which is not surprising because, you know, in that whole vegan lifestyle, a lot of them tend to be have more new age beliefs, which are some of the things that, you know, and not that I necessarily believe everything that she believed, but I've heard it, you know. And so, I don't know. It was fascinating. It's very, very well done. You know. I think that they do a really good job of showing that she was a victim, but also not excusing the things that she did either. But it's fascinating. I mean, it literally made Tinder Swindler look like nothing. Yeah.
I read an article with her where she talked about it. She was like, it's kind of accurate. She was like, it was over such a long period of time.
Right.
Too, she said, but she also said that the only way she would do the documentary is if Netflix would pay her money so she can pay her staff back.
Yeah.
So that was like her one condition.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, it's like, I don't want to spoil anything. So but in the end, she ends up owing a lot of money to where she was just like, okay, great. That, you know, that could be, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and she has nothing.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. It's a fascinating watch. It was really, really good. So that's one I highly recommend. Last week was really rough for me because for work, I'm having to deal with a really tough case. But in addition to that, I was like, oh, now would be a great time to watch What Do We Do About Cosby, which is the documentary about Bill Cosby, which is also excellent. And I didn't realize that many of the women that he assaulted were actually on the Cosby Show as, like, with parts.
Like cast members.
Oh. Like, not cast members, extras? Per se, like but, crew? like, you know how, okay, so he was a gynecologist.
So, like, God, one
I
of the
forgot that that's what his job was,
right? Which makes everything that, even more that makes it
so
now.
Much worse. Shit. Which, like, if you're a male gynecologist, go you. And I know that there's reason. I googled why men have that job sometimes, and a lot of times because women are easier to deal with than men, like women's health. And there's only a 50-50 shot of working with men and working with women, and
right.
They like working with women. I hate that Bill Cosby was a gynecologist.
That was him probably. Well, fuck you. I'm going to be this.
He's like, I know what my job is going to be. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, one of the women that is interviewed, like, played one of the expected mothers on the show. And, like, they show the clip of her being in the show. And, like, and people being like, well, why after you were assaulted would you have agreed to be in the show? And she was like, because I worked my ass off for this, and I had prepared for this, and, like, he'd already taken so much away from me, I wasn't letting him take that, too. And he would, a lot with the, like, young actresses, would basically groom them in a, like, I'm going to mentor you way. And well, then,
Bill Cosby comes up and says he wants, I mean, I would totally be like, oh, my God.
Well, no, exactly, and that's how these women were. Yeah. And, you know, and it would be like, okay, well, we're gonna run some, like, scenarios, like practicing kind of stuff. And then he'd be like, well, take a drink beforehand. Like, it'll loosen it'll you make up. It okay. And then yeah. And then they would do one. And then it would be like, well, you're still not loose enough. Let's, you know, have another. And I mean, he was literally just drugging and raping all of these women. And then, like, God. The next day would just be, you know, yeah, it was
like
crazy.
It never happened. Or would he be like,
like, so I didn't really. So, like, Vegas was like his home away from home kind of place, and he would go there and perform. And so there were a lot of women that were like, there was one woman who just was like a cocktail waitress. And a friend of hers who was also a cocktail waitress was like, oh, well, Bill's going to have a party. Like, let's, you know, we should go. And she was like, you know, I was like, okay, like, Bill Cosby's not, like, I'm getting invited to this.
Totally.
You know, I'm going to go. And she was like, I was only planning on going for, like, an hour and then leaving. And then when they get there, it's just her, this friend, and Bill Cosby.
Nope.
You know? And, nope. Like, and so it was a lot of women waking up the next day with, like, literally no memory of what had happened. And then it was like, you know, one lady, it was like, oh, I'm going to give you tickets. Like, you're going to sit in the front row. And then, you know, when she got there, it was like, oh, Bill wants to see you in his dressing room, you know, and then she gets drugged and then wakes up the next day, like, not knowing how she got home. Like, it's a lot of that.
Who the fuck, do they talk about who his fixer was? Like, somebody he had to have
so
people.
So they talk a lot. So they do talk a lot about how people on the, like, there would always be, like, a group, like, the live studio audience would always be, like, you know, normal families, but then there would be, like, this group of models that would be, like, ushered to his room. And it was one of those things where, like, everybody knew something was going on, but nobody wanted to know what it was, yeah. Kind of thing.
Yeah. They're like, oh, it's consensual.
He did definitely have a fixer who later, I think, came out, and admitted he was. I mean, the whole thing is just, but, like, everybody knew. And also at that point in time, like, NBC, before the Cosby Show, was, like, hanging on by a thread. Hmm. Like, and the highest, so it was, like, the highest rated, like, Big Bang show, which is the current, got something like 29 million viewers for their, that was, like, their biggest one. The biggest Cosby Show episode had 65 million viewers.
Jesus
and
Christ.
So basically he was just making way too much money
for anybody to,
you know. And so
I mean, he's Bill Cosby. It's like, yes, it's Bill Cosby.
Money. That's, you know.
Yeah. So
it
was but what is really interesting about this documentary is that it's not just talking about his crimes, which are plentiful, but also about how it affects the Black community, because for the, you know, the Cosby Show was like the first time that it was a Black show about a Black family, but the Black family wasn't living in poverty. Mm-hmm. And then it became less about being, you know, an African-American show and more just like it was just a good show. But like watching
you know, like in Theo's room, posters of Black artists and, you know, and then you would see like the paintings in their homes that were done by well-known Black art. And so
when did like Fresh Prince come out?
Early 90s. So and right Cosby about the same was... time. And they talk about A Different World as well, which was the spinoff show, like when Denise went to college.
That's what I'm wondering is, I know him and Lisa Bonet did not drive well.
Yeah, I remember that too.
So she was probably like, so, I'm not dealing with your fucking gross shit.
What I remember, and they haven't, so I only made it through like half of the third episode of four. So I need to finish it. So we haven't really, I mean, they were just starting to kind of talk about A Different World and how important A Different World was.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
To, you know, to the Black community. And how that really, frankly, was possibly even more of an important show than The Cosby Show was.
Because it's hip. It was hip.
But what I remember was, I feel like Lisa Bonet had either done like Playboy or there had been nude photos that were taken. And I think it was around that time, too, that she was together with Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
And he was he had presented himself or he had made a brand of him being so fucking wholesome. And in the end.
For him in his eyes.
Well, and it's really funny because it talks about, you know, when he decided, like, he had made a decision to keep his comedy clean. But then he had been in a bunch of, like, cult movies that are, like, cult within the African-American community. Like, he did a movie with, like, Sidney Poitier where he kind of played, like, the out-of-control cop, you know, Sidney's more straight man kind of, I don't know. Because he really wanted to be a movie star, but none of those movies, like, really took off until, you know. And then how he then morphed himself and used getting older and kind of having the dad bod and the whole thing into, and The Cosby Show as well, to becoming America's dad.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just that impression that everybody had of him really kind of helped him get away with his crimes for all of these years. And so it's, but even as like a white person, you know, like
I loved that show.
I absolutely, it was probably my favorite show. And I've watched, you know, I was so excited when like reruns hit Hulu or whatever it was. Yeah. And I was watching them all the time. Like, and then the news broke. But I mean, it was a well-known secret, and it was also well-known that, but that he was a womanizer and that he was unfaithful. And so there were a lot of people that were just like, well, I knew he was a womanizer, but I didn't realize he was drugging them kind of thing. Yeah. So whether that's true or not, I don't know.
People probably didn't want to look too far into it.
No. You know, it is a lot easier to just pretend like you don't know that something's happening. And
you watched those two and then Phoenix Rising.
And then Phoenix Rising.
Fucking, we had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My brain was on
freaking
abuse overload.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We watched The Phoenix Rising. Everybody should watch it. It's about Evan Rachel Wood and her side story about being abused by Marilyn Manson. And it blew my brain.
Did you finish it, too?
I haven't even started it.
It was, you know, it was insane. And it's funny because, like, I got onto Twitter because I just wanted to see. But so many people are like, oh, my God, she's making this up. And, you know, and her fans are crazy. Like just even on Twitter.
Yeah.
Just people talking about she, you know, she's messing with the wrong fans and da 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 da. And it's batshit crazy. But I'm like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She started advocating and talking about this in, like, 2012. And she's just waited 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, this has been a master plan for a long time. She got her whole family in on it. No, he's a fucking...
There's, like, videos. They show videos. They show a lot of graphic things that I had no idea. Mm-hmm. It really, like, emotionally hit me hard.
And it wasn't just I mean, there was a lot of emotional and mental abuse happening in that relationship, but there was a lot of physical abuse as well that I wasn't aware of.
I wasn't aware that they really did fuck during that music video. And they show it without music and she's screaming while he's like ramming her.
Oh, yeah.
And you can tell it is real.
And I'm just like, ugh, like, who is this guy that thinks? And I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that he, I mean, there have been band members that have left, hit like roadies that are in that, and that I've seen all, you know, but even people that weren't in it afterwards, I was seeing like people that were, had been in the band being like, everything that these women are saying is 100% true.
I'm
like,
sure there's a whole vault of videos he has. Somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, he is a fucking predator.
Yeah.
And so I had texted Lindsay while we were watching this and I was just like, I'm so glad you didn't massage him. Like you didn't have to put your hands on him.
And I was working, I ran a show for him at the Knit and
was when you had to get him.
I had to get him
fishnets or something.
Fishnets for his hands and arms. And it was during the time of their back of him, his and Evan Rachel Wood's back and forth. And he had asked for the movie called Miss March because he was like banging the main girl, I think, of it. And he wanted to watch it. That's what somebody said, like crew. So I was like, okay, so I wonder if Evan was there or like, it just really, I was just like, gross. I helped a guy who's a fucking piece of shit. And I had to find these stupid things and I couldn't find them.
Well, then did you help him if you couldn't find him?
What?
So you really
didn't find something. I found something that worked, but.
Well, you didn't find him what he asked for.
True.
Fuck you, Marilyn Manson.
Yeah. And it just brought up like when I was sexually assaulted by one of the band, a band member, another band person, singer, when I was massaging and how I told my boss, or not my boss, but the person in charge, and they're like, oh yeah, that happens all the time, sorry. Nobody gave a fuck. I even talked to my boyfriend after it happened, and I was shook, and they're like, I don't know, rock stars do that.
But I'm a little bit in love with Evan Rachel Wood's brother.
Oh my god, yeah.
Definitely
yeah.
In love with
he's
him.
A hottie and a sweet man.
I mean, first of all, he's very attractive, but also, like,
cares for her.
Such a good brother. The three of us, along with husband Michael, went to see the Batman, Tori fell asleep.
Multiple
times. A couple times we had a poke.
Multiple times,
yeah. She was snoring all of a sudden.
It was 3 hours long.
It was. And it was my second time in that week seeing.
Yeah, that was impressive that you watched it.
Something that twice.
Yeah. I really am not into 3-hour movies at all.
But
it was a lot happening, but it was a good movie. I think Robert Pattinson did a great job as I like him as him. But I didn't watch the original Batman, so I know that
there's like 8 of them.
I know, I know that people are really like hardcore on the one Batman they really like.
I was gonna say there's like that one Batman.
No one comes for me and like tell me he sucked. I think he did a great job. I mean,
I will say one thing that sucked:
his hair. His hair.
That was bad hair.
I am so glad you said that.
I feel like they could have made him emo-y without the bad
hair. It made sense more when Michael said it's because he's supposed to be, like, young Batman. Like, age young, but, like, he's only been Batman for a short time. So
that's
it's all
true.
Angsty
and
teenager-y phase of being Batman.
He is younger than, like, the Christian Bale.
Yeah,
Batman.
Like, he's supposed to be relatively young.
He doesn't care about his parents. Yeah. I just kept thinking how voluminous it was. And I was like, I don't think that's a wig. I really think that's his hair.
It was funny because Lindsay would turn over to Tori and say something, and then Tori would turn over to me and say something, and then I would turn over to Michael and say something. And Michael and Lindsay on the end both already know. So I'm like, oh my god, that's Colin Farrell. And Michael's like,
yeah.
And I'm like, what? Like, no.
And she looks back at me and we're both like, no.
Me and Tori are like, there's no way.
Like, they should have gotten whoever did Colin Farrell's prosthetics for that movie for What About Pam?
For Pam?
Or the thing about Pam.
Okay, though, that show, though,
is so
great. I love it. Like, it's the great narration and how it's done. Like, 10 out of 10. I mean, the fact that
they got Keith Morrison to do the narration for it is
so good. Are you guys caught up on it?
No.
I am.
Grant and I were talking about, so Grant is my boss, for anybody that doesn't know. Grant
and I were talking about. He's a very sweet man. I met him.
I met him. I was asking Grant about that, and I was, you know, we were talking about judges that are, you know, obviously one, you know, are
very biased.
Biased, yes. And, you know, and I'm just like, would you ever, you know, can you get a judge removed, like, you know, an obviously biased judge? And he was just like, you can, you know, you can, like we've seen on like Law and Order, you know, where they can put in like a complaint or something. But he was like, but it's suicide. So like no lawyer will ever do it because it would be essentially the end of their career.
That is insane.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Just so basically, like, rogue judges can just get away with shit because
they're judges. The cog in the bullshit machine that's supposed to help people, but just exploits them.
Okay, bye.
We love you. Goodbye.
Bye. Okay, love you. Bye.
Three's a Crime, a Crew Crime Podcast.
Hey, Weirdlings, have you ever listened to a podcast and thought, man, I could do this? Well, guess what? That's exactly what we did, and you can too. Podcasting is a fun, inexpensive, and easy way to expand your reach online. Whether you have a message that you want to share with the world, just think having your own talk show would be cool, or you're looking for a new marketing or revenue stream, Buzzsprout has you covered. We can confirm that they're hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed on all of the major podcast directories within minutes of finishing your recording. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping all of us succeed. Join 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout, and let's get your message out to the world. If you're ready to get started on your podcast, follow the link in our show notes and you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card, and it helps support our show too. So what are you waiting for? Start your new podcast today.